the planet now. Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Fukushima irradiated and fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest today is Julia Pisamonte Colomartino. And I think I said it just fast enough.
Perfect pronunciation. I commend you.
Yeah, well, maybe I should do it in my Cheech Marin accent, eh?
I know. No, it's your practice with doing the Italian mafia guy. See, that's why you got the name right.
You know, you might have something there.
Exactly.
Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Okay. My name is Julia. I am, for a living, I am an artist, and I am a visual artist. I do historical reproduction pottery from the period of ancient Egyptian, actually Canaanite, all the way to Italian Renaissance. And I'm also a painter, and I paint oil portraits of people and pets in the old Renaissance style. But what I also do is I'm a healer. I've been a healer for a lot of years. I'm what you call a shamanic practitioner. Don't call myself a shaman per se, but I went to school to study herbs, how they work. I work with energy. I've done it for many, many years. And I basically help people that have been affected in their life. You know, I do a spiritual program of recovery from drugs and alcohol, and I help a lot of people do that. You know, so I'm here to serve. My art is how I make my living, but what I'm really here to do is help people out as best I can by sharing my own experience with them and help them to kind of wake up. So I don't know if that summarizes it, but that's pretty
well,
much
let's talk but more specific detail. What actually motivated to get you into herbs and healing and all of that jazz?
Okay, well, all my life I suffered from horrendous depression. I'm glad to say that I don't like I used to. And when I stopped basically using drugs years and years ago was a way of self-medicating. And then when those stopped working and I ended up getting clean off all that junk, I found that I didn't want to go on drugs. I didn't want to be doing the Thorazine shuffle going up the street somewhere. You know, I just didn't want to get dumbed down. And I knew that stuff was just really bad for you. So it kind of prompted me to delve into the world of herbs and as a way basically of looking to heal from the depression. And I found a lot of interesting things, but I found that they worked. I found that by, you know, using different herbs, it wasn't just about healing the physical body. Also, it was healing the entire human being, the spirit, the emotions, as well as the physical, because the physical is really the last thing that gets sick. And that kind of prompted me in a journey of, you know, finding that I could very easily meditate and kind of go back and forth from, you know, visual reality to be able to sort of, without any drugs or anything like that, sort of go into what the shamans call non-ordinary reality. And, you know, I don't have like guides and all that kind of stuff that communicate with me or anything like that, but I can basically connect when I want to and just sort of get, you know, just kind of connect in a spiritual way and get more like hits of intuition. You know, I don't get these huge visions necessarily or anything like that. And that kind of guides me of the next right step to take. You know, I don't pride myself on being a psychic or anything like that. But what it's allowed me to do is once I was able to kind of get myself together as far as, you know, staying off all those drugs for many years and being able to heal a lot of the psychic trauma that was done to me as a kid and stuff, it allowed me to help others in this way because I found out that, you know, why I was self-medicating is I'm an empath. I feel very strongly other people's emotions and feelings, which also kind of left me prey to what you might call the scumbaggery out there that really did a job on me all the way from, you know, as a little kid in school till I realized what I was dealing with. So now that I'm aware of this stuff, I help other people you know, to first of all, making them aware that, you know, yeah, you are dealing with some really sick people out there. Yes, it has affected you. Here's how you can take your power back. Here's what you can do about it. And I'll share my experience and how I did it. And I always say, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So, you know, I might maybe turn them on to different videos, or, you know, maybe just sit and listen to what they might be going through, share my experience, make herb mixtures. Sometimes I do hands-on healing like Reiki. It really varies from person to person that I work with as far as what I do. So,
has there been, when you say you've been psychically attacked and so on and so forth, can you describe that? Elaborate.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, well, at school, okay, I'm being a very, very sensitive person. I remember being around some of the kids in school and just feeling like, I don't know how, almost like I had crap magnet written on my head, you know? And I'd be teased. I would be beaten up physically. I was tormented like 24/7 in school. And then I'd go home. And I grew up in a family of, let's call it, you know, to be putting it nicely, narcissists. So, you know, it was like I was getting it from all ends and not knowing how to defend myself, or not even realizing that these people have no empathy or don't think like me or feel like me. I couldn't wrap my mind around why. So how I felt was dispirited, depressed all the time, twice tried to take my own life even. This is in high school. And, you know, thank goodness there were some good teachers, actually one particularly that actually saved my life, because he realized what was going on with me and was kind and loving, you know. But, you know, just every single day was like a nightmare. It felt like I was in jail. It felt like I didn't understand. I couldn't wrap my mind around the way people acted. I never could get the whole concept, for example, of sports. Like, you know, what's so cool about everybody beating each other up and getting all angry? That kind of was always my take on it. I can admire the skill that it takes to do professional sports, but that element of it always turned me off. So, psychic attack feels like you're getting the life drained out of you. It feels, you feel like you don't want to live, you don't want to go on, and you question yourself. You think it's you, and it's not. That's what I learned later. You're convinced that there's something so seriously wrong with you that you don't even deserve to breathe.
You know, that sounds a lot like employment.
Yeah, actually, a lot of those jobs are run by psychic wackos, you know? And when you talk about being employer phobic, I get that. For me, I always worked like in fields like, you know, restaurants, and I worked as a waitress. I did factory work, all kinds of jobs like that, you know, and even though I was an artist, but I never had the courage until I finally got sick and tired of those type of jobs to take the leap and just try to end up working for myself. And so slowly I kind of did it. And very much like you, you know, sometimes I don't know where the next dollar's coming from, but everything's always worked out. It's always worked out. I started in 2006 and, you know, to actually start doing my art. And I have 2 degrees in school. I've got a degree in graphic design and a bachelor's degree in fine arts, which basically all the bachelor's degree taught me was to teach. You know, and I didn't want to do that because I got the fact that, you know, I felt like school was just too restrictive. And it was just all about really just programming you and regurgitating information, which I did quite well at because I graduated magna cum laude, but it means nothing. But with doing my artwork, I was able to combine all the different things I learned into the art of doing historical reproduction paintings and pottery. And I put it this way, when the pain becomes stronger than the fear, that's when you make the leap. And that's what I finally did. So in 2007 was the last time I went to like a regular quote job and just realized, you know what? I'm making more money sitting on my butt at home rather than commuting in crappy weather an hour each way to a job that's paying me crap, where they don't care about me, you know, and where I was making the store all kinds of money and I'm not seeing any of it because I had an expertise in herbs. I was working in a health store at the time and nice people, but you know, it's like, yeah, I'm not really being true to myself here. And when I asked for a raise, they said no. So I said, see you later. Best thing I ever did. So that kind of started me on my journey of the self-employment. And so it slowly started getting better and better. I then started to delve into this whole prosperity consciousness thing, because I realized just by listening to different things online, when you're home and you're working on the wheel, it gives you an opportunity to listen to a lot of programs like yours. And I realized I had been programmed into poverty consciousness. And so I began to slowly change that, you know, just different techniques like, for example, EFT, which is called its emotional freedom technique. It's a way of tapping on different points in your body to reprogram your subconscious mind, listening to different subliminal tapes, you know, just really working on it. It took a lot of work, you know, really working on changing my incorrect beliefs about the fact that you're an artist, you're crap, you'll never amount to anything, and you're never going to earn money, you're going to starve, to realizing that, no, as an artist, I can do well. And there's a lot of people out there that are doing quite well as artists. Why not me? And so I started going along. And then my husband got sick in 2007. So that was like a real challenge. Fortunately, I had a good foundation of working for myself and being able to, you know, to do this, that I had the courage to hang in there when all of a sudden, you know, his income's cut off because he's sick. And long story short, he was diagnosed with throat cancer. Fortunately, I have a background as an herbalist, so I realized cancer's not a death sentence. Unlike what they tell you, you know, just because the doctor says, well, you got 6 months to a year to live, doesn't mean diddly. And the first time he chose to go the conventional route and have surgery, and it came back again in 2008. So now in the meantime, you know, no income coming in other than my artwork, and business is getting better and better, slowly but surely, and always found the way to, you know, always paid the bills, was always able to eat. You know, went to food pantries when I needed to. Whatever I needed to do, I did. And I took care of my kids at the same time. So fast forward, in 2008, my husband gets the cancer back. And this time they say, okay, you don't do our treatment the way we tell you, you're going to die. And he said, you know what? He said, I'm not going through the surgery again, because they, with the throat cancer, they had removed the base of the tongue, the lymph nodes, you know, a good chunk of his mouth. So basically he had to learn to eat and speak all over again. And he said, you know, no, not going through it. So this is where it opened the door to do all the alternative stuff. And with my knowledge of herbs, I was able to make him a tea. I was able to do some hands-on healing. And we also sought the help of a wonderful acupuncturist who, was able to give us a reduced price because the guy really, really cared about seeing that my husband was going to get well. And another technique started by a Chinese guy who is a political refugee of all things. The technique is called Tong Ren, T-O-N-G-R-E-N. And he works totally on donation, you know, and this guy's helped so many people. He has like something like a 92% success rate with cancer. And that's as per a Dana-Farber study. So I'm not just saying that. So thank goodness my husband ends up recovering from that. And, you know, then we made the move all the way across the country to New Mexico. And here I am, you know, and, you know, still continuing with my artwork. And in the area, the Hispanic culture would call me what's known as a curandera, one who heals. And so I work on donation only with that, too. So it's been a combination of doing both of those things. And it's been an amazing experience. And the more that I do it, the more I realize that, you know, you're dealing with some real sickies out there and some real sick people that do a lot of damage in their wake. And, you know, I deal with what happens to people after these folks get damaged. But having been through the experience, and having gone through all these different trials, I'm able to, you know, give them some hope, you know. And now whether they choose to take my advice or not, that's totally up to them. It's a two-way street. You know, I don't say that I cure anybody, because I don't, you know. It's whether you want the help. You know, I don't take credit really for any of it, other than showing the way. So that's pretty much it, you know, as far as what I do.
Well, I do believe that there's a lot of journeys that everybody takes, and everybody winds up exactly where they deserve to be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I fully concur.
Apart from people who get mass genocided and exterminated by tyrannical government, of course. They usually don't deserve that.
Exactly. Right. But you know what? There is no escape from karma.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I don't believe in karma, because if karma's like, bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people, I think it's actually the opposite. Bad things happen to good people because they don't suspect the bad people who good things happen to. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Julia Pasamonte Colamantino, and we are talking about spiritual healing and art. I was just thinking about this. Original ideas, art and so forth, are often the things coveted and stolen by the skimbaggery element that we're talking about.
Yes, they love beauty and they can't create it because they're not creative.
It's really sad, and this goes back to what I was talking about karma to a degree, because you see the evil people who have just an inability to create things. Mm. Any of the people like you and me who are good, decent, kind, friendly, empathic, or whatever, and creative up to wazoo,
right?
And they try and destroy people like us, and or steal any idea that we've got that they want.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's like some kind of a battle between those who actually give a frack and those who just really just want to take it all.
You know, and the ironic thing about that is that I tried to become one of the people who just didn't give a frack by numbing myself, you know, because I realized that in this world, if you're numb and don't care, you get places. And then, you know, of course, being that I am a feeling human being, unlike those people, you end up meeting yourself around the corner and it bites you and you have to confront it. In other words, if you're going to grow as if you are in fact a human being and not the undead, you have to go through pain. That's just a fact. It's just part of the process, because through that you gain wisdom. And I have my mentor often tells me the longest journey you'll ever take in your life is from your head to your heart. You said it's about 16 inches, but it's the longest journey you'll ever take. And then from your heart to your gut is even longer, because that's where you acquire wisdom through your experiences. And these guys, they might be clever, they might be intelligent, you know, but they lack wisdom. And so we end up being able to run circles around them. So the key, I think, is just to be aware that they, in fact, exist.
Can I offer an analogy here?
Sure.
You ever had a really small child come at you, like waving his arms, trying to hit you and stuff like that? And basically, you just hold on to his head and you keep him at arm's length. And he can't reach you or do anything. It's freaking pathetic.
That's brilliant. Yes, that's basically what you do. And you know what they really hate? When you laugh. Because they can't. Because laughter requires humor, and humor requires creativity.
Well, I found that they do actually. I disagree with you, but they've got this. They've got a sense of humor, except it's only Schadenfreude to a large degree. That they, I mean, I'll laugh at the suffering of somebody else if it's funny. Mm. But
okay, yes.
They can't laugh at something that's actually just genuinely funny. More to the point, they can't make up really genuinely hilarious jokes.
Exactly.
Right?
It's kind of on the level of a really dumb sitcom.
Which is incidentally the reason why most of these really dumb sitcoms are run by psychopaths.
I know they do, don't they? I mean, I remember being a kid, I was able to figure it out like in the first 30 seconds, and I get bored and shut the TV off. Now I don't have TV. Haven't had one for 3 years. Don't miss it.
I don't watch television. I monitor enemy communiques. Okay, when you're watching a sitcom, and this is quite an interesting thing, is that you look for all the symbolism and you look for all those key like Illuminati words and stuff like that. Remember that there's this award winning show called Glee, and it's uber cliche. Okay, cheerleaders and jocks and geeks and so on.
God,
so
gag.
Right, mm-hmm. And on one of the ads advertising the show, there's a young man talking to another young man saying, "Welcome to the New World Order," as he just pulls like some kind of a scheme on him and deposes him from his popularity post. And then we were flipping through channels one time, we come across the show again, and there's a girl who's very poor, and everybody feels really bad for her. They've got a lot of sympathy, right? Mm-hmm. And she says, "Well, at least I didn't end up in a FEMA trailer somewhere."
Oh.
Now, to the uninitiated, these seem like isolated, whatever. Doesn't really mean much.
Right.
But to those who know, these are deliberately inserted little messages here.
Mm-hmm.
That have a direct effect. Everything that you see and everything that you hear and everything that you think has a direct effect, I'm starting to wonder. Because look at it this way. That's all that influence really is, right? And yes, you are what you get influenced by to a large degree, aren't you?
Actually, I believe this is for me, but I believe that everything you think is actually mirrored in your reality. So if you want to change your reality, you change your thinking process. Difficult to do, but can be done. In other words, if I'm trying to put lipstick on and I'm looking in the mirror and I try to put the lipstick on the reflection, how far do you think I'll get? But if I put it on my own face, it's going to get mirrored.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. And what they're trying to do, they know this. So through really tricky stuff, you know, there's subliminal programming that goes on in the commercials or even some of the shows you watch, these little messages and things like that. Because when you're watching television, you go automatically into an alpha state. In other words, your brain normally runs on beta waves, and then you get a little bit lower. It's like an alpha state, which is sort of daydreaming. A little bit lower than that, it's a not delta state, the one before that.
It's a subconscious dream state.
Correct. Yeah, it's theta, excuse me. And then delta is like really, really when you're almost unconscious. But at any rate, when you're watching television, your brain is like an open portal. And you can get really, you can really mess yourself up. So,
And then that funny, Bill Hicks even said this. Yeah. He said, "Watching television is like taking a black magic marker to your third eye."
Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to do. Exactly, because if you get rid of the intuition, you can be programmed and controlled much more easily because you don't think, you're not using your intuition. You become an outer-oriented person like they want you to be, like they are, because they have no intuition. Well, they're not able to be inner-oriented. They envy that in us. Michael Sarian, I think, talks about it really well, about the difference between the inner-oriented creative human being in the outer-oriented sociopath, narcissist, or psychopath. And there are differences, of course, like everything, there's shades of gray. And the only thing they get turned on by is stim. You know, when you're on TV, like the commercials fly at you, and then they yell at you, and then blah, 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 blah. My husband and I decided 3 years ago to get rid of cable, and we only have internet. And even though we really never had the TV turned on all the time, we noticed that there was a silence in the house that did not exist. So it makes me really wonder what is going on. Because we noticed, we're both very sensitive, we're both empaths, and we noticed a difference. And I was like, wow, you know, it really makes you wonder what that does to your body, what it does to your psyche, what it's doing to people. And you can almost tell people that are like TV-holics, they're like programmed. They're rushing to the mall to get the Christmas stuff, and it's only Halloween, you know? oh, I've got to buy presents, or I've got to get the latest outfit, or have you seen this movie lately? And it's like, I'm out of the loop, and I'm glad. Anything I need to know, people that watch TV continuously will tell me anyway. So, you know, it just, I think, allows the, it gets that chatter out of your life so that it allows you to be able to calm down, center yourself, and use that intuition, which helps you to create and grow as a human being. And that's how you beat the game. You know, they can't control that. They cannot stop us from evolving. They cannot stop us from acquiring wisdom. They can't stop us from loving that which they're not able to do. And that's how you get by. Humor, when I say humor and the ability to laugh, I'm talking about not laughing at someone else's expense, but like you said, laughter from the heart. Really just being able to laugh, you know, and it puts you in a higher, finer vibration. And in a sense, if you can do that in life and especially not take yourself seriously, you know, you can get through anything. And I
laughter gets you high. I mean, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's an addictive drug that doesn't have any downsides.
Exactly. That's why I love listening to your show. And it's how I get turned on to listening to your show, because I laugh my head off when I listen to you. You're hilarious. You remind me of my oldest son, who has a razor sharp wit like you do, you know. And when we get on the phone, all we do is laugh at life. And he's been, even my oldest boy, he's been through some heavy stuff in his life, you know. But we can laugh about it. You know, just laugh at just the absurdity of it all. And that's what gets you through. You know, and I really think that's what it's all about. And then
it's not like you have a lot of choice. Right. You know, like there's a wrong way to do it and there's a right way to do it. And there's not really much of a choice.
This is true.
Okay, well, you can go miserable through life and mm-hmm. take yourself too seriously. Or you can go happy through life and not take yourself too seriously. It's pretty simple, baby.
Yeah, my attitude is pretty much like, frack it. Just keep going.
That's funny you should mention that, because that's precisely what a couple of radio show hosts have asked me at one point or another, you know, was what's one really good piece of advice you can give me? Well, just say these two words, frack it.
Frack it.
And of course, I'm using a euphemism because of the FCC radio regulations that prevent us from actually saying real words.
Exactly. frack
it's quite words. Frustrating.
I know, it's true, because the other way you just it just you get heavy, you know. And you know, for me, I know when I let myself get all, you know, and I go through periods where I have, you know, perhaps not the best days, and you know, how good am I to anybody else when I'm like that? I'm not, you know. And if in fact I'm here to serve, and I agree with what you say in your show a lot about doing your part, you know, on some level to kind of get things moving, you know, even if you just stir up the junk for a while and get people to think, you know, you can't do that if you're always walking around miserable and life sucks and this is horrible and if you become a fear monger. Yes.
I love the people who are like, you try to host a protest or something like that, and they're like, oh, protesting never accomplishes anything. I'm just going to sit at home and do nothing. Hold on a second.
Anyway, let me just
see about this. Bro, I'll tell you what. I'll go out to the protest. I'll take my megaphone. I'll take my cameras. I'll interview the activists, and we'll talk about some really important issues, and then I'll publish all that stuff online, okay? And you just sit at home and do nothing.
Right.
And tell me that I'm accomplishing less than you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Are you freaking out of your mind?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the same thing with what I do. It's like, you know, oh, you know, you just want to play around in your herbs. You should go to a real doctor so they can poison you. No, thank you. Because what I do works. And, you know, I don't force my views on anybody. I try to be the example that I want to see, you know, just by virtue of just being who I am. Hopefully it'll catch on, you know, a little bit. And not that I'm all great or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes people, you basically can get a lot more done by attraction. And, you know, people say, huh, she's got a little something I want. What is that? And when they ask you, then you offer information, and it's getting the information to people. How many people know that Tongren that I had mentioned earlier is 92% successful and has healed pancreatic cancer, brain cancer, coma. Okay, and I'm not talking out of my neck. My husband and I would go into Haverhill, Massachusetts when we were living in New Hampshire every other week to these free sessions that worked by donation only, and watched four people get better from pancreatic cancer that had been diagnosed positively, that had been given less than a year to live. We watched them get well, you know? But no, and so my job is like, it might really annoy people, but I'm going to get the information out anyway because I really don't give a frack. You cannot like what I say. That's okay. You know, I feel that I need to do this. So I do.
It's amazing. It's like a sliding scale. Like how much stress you feel in your life is directly proportional to how much you give a frack. All right.
Right on.
So if you don't give a frack at all, that's there's right. Zero stress.
No stress. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's just not worth it. I'm 53 years old, and it's like I've learned in my life, how important is it? You know, that's what I ask myself. You know, I mean, I still can have a meltdown over broken shoelace. I'm human, you know. But then I have to stop myself and say, you know, how important is it to get that upset over a broken shoelace? Really? You know, it's not. It's really not. It doesn't matter. I mean, what matters to me, at least in my life, are the people in my life that I love and that love me, you know? And pretty much that's it. It's all about interpersonal relationships. And, you know, I think that if you've got that going for you, you're a rich human being. I really do. You know, and I have to say that for me, I've got a wealth of just all kinds of neat and interesting people in my life today. And I'm also able to pay that back pay it forward and help other people when they ask, you know, and I always say when they ask, because if someone doesn't ask for help, you can't make them.
Well, you certainly can't take responsibility for them not asking for help. By the way, that's another thing that I want to advise all other radio show hosts and things like that who are always struggling for money. Look, bro, if you've got real problems, ask your audience. They're
right.
Listening to you for a reason, and they will help you because they care about you, all right? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break.
Rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about being an incredible, respectable professional, as well as being an edible extraterrestrial. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
An edible extraterrestrial. That's interesting.
an incredible edible extraterrestrial.
Ah, incredible edible. Yeah, yeah.
Julia Passamonte Colomartino is my guest. And a lot of people don't know I can speak that fast. But yeah,
amazing.
I do.
I'm impressed.
In fact, that reminds me of one time when I was in high school and we're reading the Shakespeare play, and the teacher didn't like it, and neither did the rest of the students, but we had to read it because of the syllabus. So I read it incredibly quickly out loud.
That must have been.
Got through I think, 16 pages
before. In like 5 minutes.
pretty quick succession of time or something anyway, just to finish off the play, because it was getting into summer and nobody wanted to be there, and so I was just like,
right. Oh my
yeah.
Gosh,
it's
funny.
It was good. It was quite funny. And which was convenient for use in rapping or something like that. I want to see what's the fastest anybody's actually ever been able to talk.
God, I know there's a guy that used to do a commercial that was several years ago that, you know, and it was like, and if you slowed him down, everything was clear. Can't remember his name, though, but he was known for that. You know, the disclaimer that was at the end of a lot of those commercials? And he'd say it like in 2 seconds flat, probably do two paragraphs. And I can't remember his name, but there's been a few people like that that have, I don't know how they do it.
Oh, it's about challenging yourself and seeing where you can go and what you can do. Because ultimately, what I find is the problem with most people is that they're afraid to do this. You know, they're afraid to open up and be really honest about who they really are and what they actually really want to do. They're too bashful to say, "Hey, look, I'm really talented at such and such and blah blah blah, and I want to do that." You know, there's no risk, there's no challenge, and so there's no growth.
They're comfortable in their mediocrity.
A lot. When did banality become a good example to follow? You know.
Exactly. Exactly.
For those of you who don't know what banality means, it means it's so boring and predictable that you virtually know what's going to happen next.
Well, some people are comfortable with that. I've never been one of those type of people because I just always felt that there was so much more and I was missing something or they weren't telling us. You know, I always had that feeling of there's so much more. And for me, it took, you know, going all the way to the bottom with the whole, you know, drugs and alcohol and all that stuff, to realize, you know, that there's this whole world out there of meaning and beauty and life, you know, not without its dark side as well. Because I think you can't be all, you know, oh, granola head, everything's all wonderful, because there is a dark side. You've got to be smart about it. I think David Icke puts it as being spiritually street smart. That being said, I think a lot of people have to get to the point where they either have a life-changing event or something to that effect, where the pain of being the same old becomes stronger than the fear of change. And that's when you make the leap. And I hope to inspire people doing, you know, by doing my work, my artwork. A lot of people, though, don't even have a clue what it is they want or who they even are. It's so sad. You know, they just kind of go through life and either they're, you know, they're the type that kind of knee jerk through life, or they're just asleep. You know, they're sleepwalking. More and more.
But there's even worse than that. There's some of the people who get over that period and then think that that's all that there is to get over.
Right.
And then they forget that they also have to get over themselves, not just the past version of themselves.
Exactly. And getting over yourself is, for me, at least a lifelong process. You say it often, and I really admire you for that, about the ability to introspect, to be able to look at yourself and say, you know, is my head getting so fat that I can't fit through the door? You know, am I doing things ego-based, or am I doing it really from the heart because this is meaningful? Am I just trying to look good? Or, you know what I mean? And asking those kinds of questions, being willing to do that, being willing to stay right size, I think is critical.
You've got to make yourself uncomfortable and feel a bit of pain now and then, just to make yourself know that you're still alive.
Exactly. My mentor often tells me there is no escape from the pain. He said, you don't have to like it, but you need to find a way to deal with it. And that's what you do. You just deal with it and go forward. You know, you don't let it suck you down. You don't let it kick you in the butt. You just keep going, you know. And there are people along the way I have found in my life experience that, when you feel overwhelmed, that are there for you. You know, I've had some amazing people in my life that, and not necessarily blood. In fact, definitely not family, blood related, but that have extended their hand and say, hey, it's okay. And, you know, and when I couldn't, especially when my husband was really sick there for a while, and I didn't know whether I was coming or going, that literally dragged me by the armpits and helped me just get through the next day and the next day emotionally, and supported me through that stuff. You know, and that's what I do for other people. It's kind of you pay it forward when you get the chance, you know, and life goes on that way. Again, it's the ability to love and express love. I think that's what it's really all about. You just have to also know, though, that not everybody has the ability to do that. There are people that are out there with no empathy, no conscience, no guilt, scumbaggery, as you call it,
I love it, like, encapsulating. Yeah. They have no conscience. They have no empathy, only scumbaggery.
Exactly, they're scumbaggery. But this is exactly right. And you cannot evaluate your experience with these people based on how you feel and the fact that you emote and the fact that you have empathy. You can't do that. You've got to realize the best thing you can do is run really fast the other way and get the frack away from them fast. You know, I've worked with people that have been, we were going back earlier talking about being psychically attacked. I have a friend right now that's in a horrible relationship with somebody like this. And she didn't understand what was going on. And I actually turned her on to Thomas Sheridan's video about puzzling people. And she was like, oh, that's just how he is. I said, okay, now you know what you need to do. You know what you're dealing with. You need to get the heck away from that person because they're not like you. And they're not really going to care. They'll go find another victim. They're not going to care that you're going to say, see you later.
Yeah. You know? See, the problem I have with that is that if you have the ability to expose them so that they don't wind up going to find another victim, so that they actually wind up going to prison for these crimes that they constantly commit and perpetrate on people, the problem is, as well, as you said, you've basically just got to get the frack away from them any way you can.
Yeah, exactly.
The difficulty therein comes if you are wanting to expose them, you need like a massive support team because what happens is you get a negative feedback loop. You send an attack out to a psychopath, and not only will the psychopath attack you back in ways that you couldn't really imagine, but he'll also have all cronies and so on and so forth that will come out and defame, stalk, assault, theft, sabotage, basically you name it. So what happens is you need that support base. So during that entire period, not only can you be secure your reputation, but you can also be secure of the people around you, because all the people around you, those who you feel closest to and most trusted, they will also become targets, and they need to be aware of what's going on so that any poison that gets dipped in their ear doesn't make its way into their brain and wind up betraying you from behind. Because that's another element that was really frightening, what Thomas Sheridan and a number of other experts
absolutely
say, is that contact with the psychopath is infectious.
Yes, excuse me, sorry I interrupted you there. Yes, absolutely. It depends on the level. I mean, there's some that the one, fortunately, that my friend is dealing with is a loner, doesn't have any friends, nobody likes the guy or anything like that. And he's terrified of prison because that's where it came from. So all she has to do is like, I'll turn you in. See you later. But he had such a hold on her as far as emotionally, because this woman had been through, I mean, the most horrendous childhood of, you know, abuse and beatings. And I mean, she's just trying to get herself together. And it's been a lifetime for this lady. She's 60 years old, you know, and this guy, they prey on people like that. They, you know, they love bomb you at first. And then, you know, I just watched the whole process of how this poor thing was just, it was like the life was getting sucked out of her. And when I had her watch that video, she goes, oh my God, that explains everything. Now I understand what I'm dealing with, because she was trying to assess the person based on her own empathy and her own ability to feel and could not wrap her mind around why. And it's like, you got to understand this is a whole different level of values, or lack thereof, or as Michael Tesserian says, amorality. You know, there are no ethics with some of these people. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to sit around and hate them or be all paranoid and stuff, but if you know what you're dealing with, then you can arm yourself accordingly, like you said.
Well, you've got to have armor and you've got to have weapons, and they best be in good working order, otherwise you're not going to survive the conflict. You know, that's the thing.
Yes.
This is what the humor is about. It's not because, you know, you want to just have fun and so on and so on. It's actually to protect yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The humor's the thing.
You don't have much of a choice, ladies and gentlemen. You must laugh. Otherwise, you will get yourself into some really, really unfortunate business. Indeed. And I will be back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. My very special guest will be back as well. While on this break, ponder to yourself, what is infighting? Infighting is divisive. It's about conquering the movement from within, right?
Right.
What is exposing? Exposing is when you find somebody who's trying to divide and conquer the flock, and you call them out so that they don't succeed in their plan, and you'd be very wise to know the difference. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.